It's a new day. Hear his word. Let us pray. The sunrise morning show.
It is Tuesday, the 30th of June, and as we close out the month, let's begin in prayer, praying the words of Psalm 5, which we'll hear at Mass today. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Lead me in your justice, Lord. At dawn, I bring my plea expectantly before you. For you, O God, delight not in wickedness. No evil man remains with you. The arrogant may not stand in your sight. You hate all evildoers. You destroy all who speak falsehood. The bloodthirsty and the deceitful the Lord abhors. But I, because of your abundant mercy, will enter your house. I will worship at your holy temple in fear of you, O Lord. Lead me in your justice. All glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. At dawn, I bring my plea expectantly before you, a psalm, like many psalms, tailor-made for the morning. It is the Sunrise Morning Show. Thanks for being with us here on a Tuesday morning on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matt Swaim. Anna Mitchell has news. Paul Lockman at the controls. And up this hour, Dr. Regis Martin will be along about, he's got an article that just was put in the National Catholic Register about seeing the beauty of God in the small things, specifically, in this case, a hazelnut. You'll understand, especially if you're drinking hazelnut coffee this morning. Marlon De La Torre will talk more about the controversy over Junipero Serra and actually what it says about the larger picture of what are we doing when we evangelize. Ken Craycraft will unpack the latest craziness from the Supreme Court of the United States of America. And Elizabeth Scalia will talk about why reconciliation ought to cost us something. So stay with us if you can. Right now, it is 2 minutes past. Here's Anna Mitchell with news.
Good morning. Pro-life organizations are expressing shock and major disappointment in the Supreme Court ruling in favor of allowing Louisiana abortion clinics to operate without their abortionists having admitting privileges at a nearby hospital. The decision was 5-4 yesterday in favor of the abortionists, with Chief Justice John Roberts issuing a concurring opinion alongside the four liberal justices. Catherine Glenn Foster of Americans United for Life issued a statement saying, quote, "The U.S. Supreme Court's decision strengthens abortion businesses at the cost of women's lives." She said, "Those of us in the fight for the right to life know better than most that the road to justice is often long, painful, and riddled with disappointment." Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has signed a bill into law that requires a 24-hour waiting period before women can get an abortion. The waiting period was approved on the last day of the legislature earlier this month when House Republicans added it to a bill. Planned Parenthood of the Heartland and American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa have filed a lawsuit in hopes of stopping the law from taking effect on Wednesday. Three of the nation's coronavirus hotspots are beginning to shut down again. More from Mark Mayfield.
More than 1,000 health professionals in Arizona have signed a letter for another stay-at-home order. The governor didn't issue one on Monday, but is closing bars, gyms, movie theaters, and water parks. Bars are also closed in Texas, where at least four counties are asking for permission to issue their own lockdown. Florida has taken action on bars as well, even closing some beaches for the July 4th weekend. Mark Mayfield, NBC News Radio.
The Archdiocese of St. Louis is issuing a statement defending the statue of St. King Louis IX, which sits in Forest Park. The statue was the scene of protests, calling for its removal over the weekend, citing the king's role in a violent crusade in the Middle East centuries ago. The Archdiocese says St. Louis was not a perfect man, but that he should also be remembered for implementing reforms in France to help the poor and the sick, including opening hospitals and sharing his daily meal with beggars. Worshippers have been welcomed back at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. Archbishop Timothy Dolan Cardinal Timothy Dolan celebrated Mass in the iconic cathedral on Sunday for the first time in months. Members of the congregation have not been allowed to celebrate Mass in person in New York City since March due to concerns over the coronavirus. Instead, services had been live streamed online. Church leaders say the gathering space was completely sanitized before anyone arrived, and worshipers were also required to stand at least 6 feet apart and wear masks. Pope Francis celebrated Mass yesterday for the solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul, and in his homily spoke of the two saints' unity despite different personalities, which came from the Lord, who commands us to love one another. From Vatican Radio, Christopher Wells reports.
Pope Francis explained that the source of unity is prayer and pointed to the example of the Church praying together for St. Peter when he was in prison in the Acts of the Apostles. The faithful of the time did not complain about persecution, but gathered together in prayer. If we spent more time in prayer and less time complaining, the Pope said, so many doors would be opened, so many chains that bind would be broken. The challenges faced by Peter and Paul led to prophecy, the second theme of the Pope's homily. The apostles were challenged by Jesus, the Pope said. Peter, when Jesus asked the apostles, who do you say that I am? And Paul, when Jesus asked him, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? These challenges and reversals, the Pope said, are followed by prophecies, born whenever we allow ourselves to be challenged by God, said Pope Francis. Today, we need prophecy, real prophecy, he continued. Real prophecy does not consist in spectacular displays, but in bearing witness in one's life to the love of God. This is how Peter and Paul preached to Jesus, he said, as men in love with God. Their love led them to offer their lives as martyrs. That was prophecy, the Pope said, and it changed history. Recalling once again the Lord's prophecy to Peter, the rock, Pope Francis said there's a similar promise for us. He is calling each one of us in order to make us living stones with which to build a renewed church and a renewed unity. Pope Francis calls on us to allow ourselves to be challenged by Jesus and to respond to his call to be builders of unity and prophets of God's heaven on earth. I'm Christopher Wells.
And baseball, I am sorry to say, now has its first players opting out of returning this season because of concerns over COVID-19. Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher Mike Leake announced through his agent that he would not be playing this season. The 32-year-old right-hander was scheduled to make $16 million in 2020 had the full season been played. Later in the afternoon, a pair of Washington Nationals announced they would not be reporting to camp July 1st because of the coronavirus. Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross both cited family reasons for their choice. Both players were members of the team when they won the World Series last season.
I suspect that won't be the last of the people to opt out.
I suspect you're right.
And the NFL ain't far behind.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you. But I don't know, man. It's tricky.
I mean, I understand. I mean, obviously, I am certainly not going to fault them for choosing to not play. Although I have to say, baseball is more socially distant than most
other sports. I mean, but, unless you're tagging somebody.
Right.
But, the trick with baseball, and this is the one that I don't understand. How do you ban spitting in baseball? How?
Yeah.
How on earth?
You know,
I laughed out loud
when I heard that reported by Paul Lockman.
Go back and watch any baseball game from 2020 and count how many times any random pitcher from a team spits between pitches or how many times like a batter spits between swings.
Oh,
like
we were talking about Yasiel Puig, who likes to lick his bat. Yep. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Or what about like when Anthony Rendon used to get to third base, the third base coach used to reach in his pocket and hand him a handful of sunflower seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Totally out. No way. Can't even grab, you know, bubble.
I'm wondering how many people are going to just not play because they're not allowed to hand their equipment to the coaches.
Oh, yeah. You got to carry your own helmet back.
Going back to Little League days.
That's the third out. You got
carry your own back to
first.
The dugout.
You can't throw your helmet and just gloves on the ground. Sorry. It's 9 minutes past the hour. I'm Matt Swaim, joined now by Dr. Regis Martin. He's a professor at Franciscan University. He writes the occasional article at the National Catholic Register as well. Dr. Martin, good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
So you posted recently at the Register about what Jesus revealed to Julian of Norwich about a hazelnut. I wonder if you could sort of recount that little episode from the sort of showings of St. Julian of Norwich, or blessed, I should say, Lady Julian.
No, I'm glad to do so. She was a 14th century mystic, an English woman, a lay woman, of course, who lived in a kind of porch alongside her local church. And Christ appeared to her, I think, maybe 16 times in a series of shattering revelations, the theme of which is the indestructibility of divine love. And the hazelnut serves, I think, as a very apt symbol. In this first showing, she's holding a hazelnut in the palm of her hand, and Jesus is asking her, well, what is this? And she, of course, is baffled by that, and so he undertakes to explain that the hazelnut is a figure, a symbol of everything that has been made. And then the Lady Julian exclaims, well, why doesn't it fall into nothingness? Because that is, after all, the tendency of every living thing, to move towards nothingness, to fall into an abyss of non-being. And Jesus says, well, the reason it doesn't disintegrate is because I made it. I love it. I keep it in being. And those are the truths that crystallize around this tiny little hazelnut, that God loves the hazelnut, he made the hazelnut, and he sustains the hazelnut. And this gives her no end of hope and consolation.
Well, it's a call to see Christ in all things. And it's a call to see Christ not only in all things, but in small things. You know, I'm reminded of, you know, kind of how the Enlightenment sort of shifted things and the way that people describe things and sort of undivinized our perspective on the world. There's this great analogy that's given in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader in the Chronicles of Narnia, where there's this retired star who's now living on Earth, this sort of a luminous human-looking figure, and he says he's a retired star. And Eustace, the cynic, says, well, in our world, a star is a flaming ball of dust and gas. And the retired star responds, well, even in your world, that's not what a star is. It's only what a star's made of. And I think that that really kind of gets at, do we see the isness of what things are as loved by God, or do we just want to dissect them and label their parts?
Yeah, no, that's an inspired example that you provide. It reminds me of an observation that Thomas Merton made. He was summoned into Louisville for a dental appointment. You know, he had been a Trappist monk in Gethsemane, which is about 60 miles outside Louisville. Anyway, he's standing on a street corner after his appointment, and he's struck by the teeming numbers of people moving back and forth. And he wonders, do they know that they're all shining like the sun, that there is some luminosity that they reflect, which they don't generate, of course. It radiates out because it's the gift of another. It comes from God, from above. If we could see one another as we really are, as God sees us, then I think we would be strongly tempted to worship our neighbor, because there is the image of God, and it's a source of wonderment and amazement.
But isn't that the piece that's missing from all these conversations going on in the world right now about respect for others, about, you know, racial disunity, about looters and rioters and peaceful protesters and police and politicians, that we are unable to see the image of God in our neighbor?
No, I'm just reminded of the poet Blake, who says we must love one another or die. We have to bear the beams of an eternal love. If I don't see a glimpse of God in my neighbor's face, then I'm more likely, I think, to demean him, debase and diminish his humanity, exploit him and kill him. I think that's what's missing from the conversation, and certainly it's missing from much of modern life, this lack of a reverence for the other, because we fail to see in the other the image of the uncreated God.
Well, it's not just missing in modern society, Dr. Martin. It's missing in me.
Right, yeah. Yeah, what's wrong with the world? I am. It begins with reforming myself. Then maybe I can tackle the problems of the city and the planet.
Well, you've written a great piece about Julian of Norwich and seeing the otherness, seeing that God loved us into existence, and it's a great reminder, a great reflection. If our listeners want to read more of your thoughts on this and other topics, where do they go?
Well, I have a half dozen books. I don't think this is the time to be promoting them, but I do write about matters spiritual for the Register every week or so. I have a blog, people are invited to peruse those pieces. I'd be gratified to get an audience.
Well, we have linked your piece on Julian of Norwich and the Hazelnut at sunrisemorningshow.com. Dr. Regis Martin of Franciscan University, thanks for your time this morning, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Well, I'm honored to talk to you. Thanks so much.
By the way, you can also check out his podcast, regismartin.podbean.com, if you want to check that out. We have the correct Regis in the mornings. Let's check on weather for the nation briefly. Got to be another stormy day across many parts of the Midwest, Central Mississippi, and lower Ohio valleys in the Mid-South. Dangerous lightning, damaging winds, frequent downpours falling on top of already saturated soil. That could mean some flash flooding through that corridor. Strong thunderstorms also a problem across the western high plains, while cold rain falls in the Rockies and Mountain West, at least the northern part of them. Not as widespread, but punchy afternoon thunderstorms will be possible across the Northeast, in the Mid-Atlantic, Carolinas, and a few spots in the South and Florida. The rest of the U.S., including the West Coast, Southwest, Southern Rockies, Southern and Central Great Plains, and Great Lakes, will have a sun-filled Tuesday. And that, as they say, is your geography lesson for the day. Headlines next at 17 past.
Central Fabricators, proud supporters of Sacred Heart Radio, custom builds and repairs corrosion-resistant storage tanks, reactors, and pressure vessels. These are used to manufacture liquids used in everyday products like health and beauty aids, pharmaceuticals, and food. Central Fabricators uses the latest in technology and modern equipment to deliver quality products, and big orders are not a problem. Central Fabricators, ASME certified, and on the web at centralfabricators.com. That's centralfabricators.com.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. For more information, 844-313-4999, 844-313-4999, or online at solidarityhealthshare.org. SolidarityHealthShare.org.
Need some gear to do summer at home this year? Many of us will be turning to Amazon to find it.
Or maybe you're buying graduation, confirmation, or first communion gifts to ship. If so, please go first to sunrisemorningshow.com and click Amazon. Then shop as usual, and you'll earn us a commission without spending anything extra.
With a decrease in underwriters during the pandemic, these commissions, no matter how small, add up and help keep us on the air.
So again, before doing your online shopping, go first to sunrisemorningshow.com and click Amazon.
Raymond Arroyo.
Part of the success we've had on the world over, I attribute to the audience, my relationship with Mother Angelica, and her teaching me that when you sit with someone, you talk to them, and you create an environment where they will tell you things they wouldn't tell anyone else. That ease, that humor, that warmth, she gave me that, and that's what I try to impart and make a part of every interview we do on the world over.
The World Over with Raymond Arroyo, Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN-TV and radio.
19 minutes past the hour. Here's Anna with news.
The pro-life community is expressing shock and major disappointment in the Supreme Court ruling yesterday in favor of allowing Louisiana abortion clinics to operate without their abortionists having admitting privileges at a nearby hospital. The Archdiocese of St. Louis is issuing a statement defending the statue of St. King Louis IX that sits in Forest Park, and the IRS is not extending the tax filing deadline again.
All right.
FYI.
News, at the top and bottom of each hour every weekday morning here on the Sunrise Morning Show.
What a depressing set of headlines. I'm just thinking about it. Sorry.
Yeah, I suppose so.
You know, I mean, we have to be informed.
We do have to be informed.
We just, you know.
But we also have to remind you that Julie of Norwich saw God in a hazelnut.
Exactly.
You got to have the balance.
Exactly.
Got to have the balance. You got to hear a little bit of the bad
news.
There
is hope.
You got to hear some of the eternal news.
You know what? Honestly, God is not anxious.
No, he is not. He is outside of time.
So, you know, all things are present with him.
Yeah. And again, as Dr. Martin was saying, he was quoting from William Blake, we must love each other or die. So, that sounds like bad news, but it's actually good news.
Indeed.
We must love each other or die.
Indeed.
And there you have it. And there you have it. We're going to talk a lot more about that Supreme Court decision here in just a little bit after your next actual news with Ken Craycraft, our legal and political correspondent.
He's got a lot to say.
Oh, he does. It's 21 past. Have you gotten in the habit of making your own coffee at home but miss those unique coffee shop blends and brews? Why not have the best of both worlds by getting yourself some Mystic Monk Coffee?
The Monks offer a number of specialty coffees and teas, which would be particularly good over ice on a hot summer day. And when you click the Mystic Monk link at sunrisemorningshow.com, we get a portion of your purchase price.
While you're at our site, check out our online store to get a coffee mug and other Sunrise Morning Show swag.
Find our store and link to Mystic Monk Coffee at sonrisemorningshow.com.
I'm Father Timothy Shear. These are biblical impressions. We all have a list of our favorite books. The church had its library of favorite books, too. The oldest substantial books of the New Testament come to us from the 3rd century of our era. They show that the early church did not possess the New Testament as a single volume, as we have it today, but as a collection of books. Two fascinating examples from the church's early library of books are more than 200 pages long. One, we now call Papyrus 46, contains the letters of Paul, including Hebrews, listed after Romans. Papyrus 45 contains all 4 Gospels and the Acts of the Apostles. The oldest book that is almost entirely intact is a book from about the year 300, containing 72 pages, that includes, in its cover, 1 and 2 Peter and the letter of Jude. So when we think of our libraries at home, we might take another look at the Bible and appreciate the fact that that's a library too, with a very important message for all of us. For Sacred Heart Radio, I'm Father Timothy Shear.
The Sunrise Morning Show continues. I'm Matt Swaim, joined now by Marlon De La Torre. You can find him online at knowingisdoing.org, and he does catechesis in the Diocese of Fort Worth. Good morning, Marlon.
Good morning, Matt. Go Bucks.
Yes, indeed. I'll let you have it this time because, you know, you get up so early for us. I want to continue the conversation we had last week that was sort of launched by this whole question of Junipero Serra, St. Junipero Serra's statues being torn down in numerous places and his legacy being questioned by especially folks who have kind of like a bit of an anarchist bent. I feel like it raises a larger question about what does it mean to evangelize? Because if Junipero Serra is merely taking a set of ideas and trying to instill them, then maybe that is a problem. But if Jesus Christ is real and he's trying to introduce people to something that has eternal importance, then he has a reason to be where he is and do what he does.
It's true. What we tend to miss, excuse me, with Saint Serra or for any saint who tries to evangelize is, we're looking for two things. One, the common good in the human being, right, which is inherent in all of us as children of God. And then the exercise of basically our human vocation. So the common good would be, all right, how does a person prosper in society? Well, what is the premise of the common good for the person to seek good beautiful, truthful things, a goodness in society. And then from there, looking after their well-being, and then in the end, finding some stabilizing peace. So those common goods, if you look at them at face value, are really meant to respect the dignity of the human person. But ultimately, those common goods and our human vocation are literally directed towards Christ himself. And so when you look at St. Siddha, he's always attacked by three veins since I've known about the saint's history, coming from California, studied it for 20 years. They attacked the fact that, well, he infringed on the pagan qualities of the Indian tribes. I always hear that attack, that's consistent too, that he force-fed Christ on these people where they were at peace and they were prosperous. And the third, that he showed no mercy to them, which all three claims are false. And when you look at the basic premise of a common good and our human vocation, it does ultimately redirect us to Christ. And he never coerced anyone. It was always a proposition or an offer based on the historical record that we have on St. Siddha. There was no coercion. It was to the point where he would even, he memorized and learned the native tongues of the indigenous people there in order to give them the opportunity to see Christ.
And I think we can sort of see how this problem is read then based on the way that we see the problem read in society today. How many times do you see a report on Christians, and by Christians they mean white evangelicals, and by white evangelicals they mean a specific voting demographic? Right? Like there's this misunderstanding that, like, you know, what you see happening in the politicians, or what you see happening in the higher political spheres, or what you would have seen happening in the era of Junipero Serra with the conquistadors and those Spanish people with political ambitions, and what the gospel actually is and how it's being lived by the saints are two very different things.
Absolutely. God forbid that we should even dare proclaim Christ in any way. And you're right. It's a very good point you bring up. There seems to be a pigeonhole or mischaracterization that only a certain group of people do certain things for certain people. And that's just not the case. If not, we wouldn't be what the sociologically they call the melting pot of society. There's no way different cultures and creeds can interact unless there's some type of civility or commonality, not just categorization of a group of people here or there. Literally, we have to interact. And I think based on what we know of St. Siddha, he knew that quite well. He knew he had the Spanish Armada, the conquistadors, and those who had other aspirations against the local natives that he knew he had to stop. That's why it's clear that he protested any time there was any form of abuse or enslavement of the Native Indians in California. So, and that was part of the premise of why he mastered the language, in order to be that bridge and not place any type of mischaracterization that they were savages. Yeah, they were pagan. Yes, they did not understand Christ or God or anything of that nature, but he brought that to them. And so he was effective, in that particular understanding. It wasn't a political regime that he was representing. It wasn't anything else other than Jesus Christ himself. And Spain knew this. But the problem is you can't control every single human being and control their intentions. That's the premise of free will. So that's part of what's missed a lot in this whole interplay on St. Siddha.
And with the question of evangelization, I was just reading an article yesterday from a disaffected, actually ex-fundamentalist Christian. And I was saying that this idea that people instill Christianity in their kids is a form of imperialism and colonialism and forcing children to become part of this belief system against their will. You see how far people can extend this. At the end of the day, they want to say that nobody can tell you anything about what to believe. But what they're really saying is nobody can tell you anything about what to believe. Listen to me. I will tell you what to believe.
Correct. It becomes the religion of the self. It's funny you mentioned that. I had an argument on Facebook with an old colleague of mine who is very critical of this proselytization of Catholicism, especially representing St. Siddha. And so he kept, and every time I make a point on Facebook or make a comment, he pounces on it all the time. And I made the comment to him. And I told him, it seems like every time I make a comment, you want to completely redirect my comment and tell me what to do. And he said, no, I'm not. I said, well, every time it's like you're waiting for me to say something, and then you completely want to change the narrative to fit whatever it is that you think is right. What's the difference? And he said, well, we're both the same. I said, well, no, I'm merely proposing. You literally want to change at will. And he didn't like that. And I said, look, if you want to take that stance, that's your position. And I'll respect your position based on what you know. But if I'm going to propose something to you, I'm just going to look at all the facts, look at all the opinions, and then from there draw a common sense conclusion. That's what we can agree on if you want to go there. But if you want to redirect my entire area of thought, that is proselytizing. And he took offense to that. Said, well, I'm sorry, but that's what you're trying to propose here to me, unfortunately. So it's kind of funny you mentioned the article because it's the religion of the me. And that religion really is devoid of any semblance of Christ, which is pretty scary.
Yeah, well, as I always say, everybody has a religion. Some people believe in God. That's just how it goes. Marlon De La Torre, we've got you linked, knowingisdoing.org at sunrisemorningshow.com. Always appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us from Texas this morning. We'll talk to you next week.
God bless. Bye-bye.
All right, it is half past the hour. Here's Anna with news.
Good morning. The pro-life community is expressing major disappointment in yesterday's Supreme Court ruling striking down a Louisiana abortion law, which required abortionists to have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital. The decision was 5-4 yesterday in favor of the abortionists. Michael Kastner reports.
NBC News legal analyst Pete Williams says the 5-4 decision is a double win for advocates of abortion rights.
The Supreme Court strikes down the Louisiana law. And secondly, these groups, these clinics, these doctors, these abortion rights advocates can challenge abortion laws.
Williams says Chief Justice John Roberts voted with four liberals on the court. The law placed restrictions on doctors who offer abortion services in Louisiana. It was similar to a Texas law that the High Court struck down in 2016. Michael Kastner, NBC News Radio.
In a statement following the ruling, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany said the ruling devalues both the health of mothers and the lives of unborn children. She said unelected justices have intruded on the sovereign prerogatives of state governments. Catherine Glenn Foster of Americans United for Life issued a statement saying, quote, the U.S. Supreme Court's decision strengthens abortion businesses at the cost of women's lives, end quote. More than 100 brands have signed on to a growing advertising boycott of Facebook and its subsidiary, Instagram. Mike Bauer reports.
Starbucks, Levi's, and Ford are the latest to join other brands over the social media giant's failures to stop the spread of hate, violence, and misinformation on its platform. The anti-Facebook campaign, dubbed Stop Hate for Profit, is being organized by civil rights groups, including the Anti-Defamation League, the NAACP, and Color of Change. They're urging brands to halt Facebook advertising for the month of July, saying the social media network profits off bigotry, racism, and violence. Hershey's chief marketing officer, Jill Baskin, said, we do not believe that Facebook is effectively managing violent and divisive speech on their platform, despite repeated assertions by Facebook to take action. Mike Bauer, NBC News Radio.
The Archdiocese of St. Louis is issuing a statement defending the statue of St. King Louis IX that sits in Forest Park. The statue was the scene of protests calling for its removal over the weekend, citing the king's role in a crusade in the Middle East centuries ago. The Archdiocese says King Louis was not a perfect man, but that he should also be remembered for implementing reforms in France to help the poor and the sick, including opening hospitals and sharing his daily meals with beggars. Three of the nation's coronavirus hotspots are beginning to shut down again. More from Mark Mayfield.
More than 1,000 health professionals in Arizona have signed a letter for another stay-at-home order. The governor didn't issue one on Monday, but is closing bars, gyms, movie theaters, and water parks. Bars are also closed in Texas, where at least four counties are asking for permission to issue their own lockdown. Florida has taken action on bars as well, even closing some beaches for the July 4th weekend. Mark Mayfield, NBC News Radio.
The IRS is not extending the tax filing deadline again. The tax agency announced yesterday that returns are due by the extension deadline of July 15th. But the IRS is encouraging people to file for an automatic extension until October 15th if they won't be able to meet the July 15th deadline. The traditional April 15th deadline was pushed back because of the coronavirus pandemic. And China appears ready to approve a national security law for Hong Kong. Beijing says the law aims to tackle subversion, terrorism, separatism, and collusion with foreign forces. It's being reported a national security office will be set up in Hong Kong. It's 35 past the hour.
Need some gear to do summer at home this year? Many of us will be turning to Amazon to find it.
Or maybe you're buying graduation, confirmation, or first communion gifts to ship. If so, please go first to sunrisemorningshow.com and click Amazon. Then shop as usual, and you'll earn us a commission without spending anything extra.
With a decrease in underwriters during the pandemic, these commissions, no matter how small, add up and help keep us on the air.
So again, before doing your online shopping, go first to sunrisemorningshow.com and click Amazon.
What does the church say about remarriage? From the earliest of time, God gave man and woman the gift of each other. Because of its origin with God, marriage is not ours to alter or tamper with. But over time, the world has allowed its view and its understanding of marriage to become distorted. Indeed, sometimes the relationship becomes so troubled that it may be in the best interest to separate. But a proper and valid marriage dictates that neither person may remarry. But unless a marriage is determined through a tribunal declaration of nullity, often called an annulment, that marriage continues to exist in the eyes of the church and in the eyes of God. Thus, without an annulment, neither divorced party is free to remarry. This can be a difficult and challenging situation. It is also an opportunity to live out one's faith and be an example to others who struggle with conflict in their lives. For more information, contact your local pastor or refer to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraphs 1649, 1650, 2380, and 2381. For Sacred Heart Radio, this is Deacon Bill Mullaney.
It's 37 minutes past the hour. Thanks for listening to the Sunrise Morning Show on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. We are happy to have you along with us today. Sunrise Morning Show legal and political analyst Ken Craycraft is back with us now. He's a professor at Mount St. Mary's Seminary of the West, and you can find his legal practice online at craycraftlaw.com. Ken, welcome back.
Thank you, Annie.
So it was a loss, seemingly a big loss for the pro-life movement yesterday in Russo v. June Medical Services. First of all, remind us about the particulars of the case.
Yeah, it was a loss, and it's hard to see a silver lining in this case as this court is constituted. This case was almost identical to a 2016 Texas case called Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt, which you and I talked about at the time and subsequently. That was a 5-3 decision striking down a Texas law which contained restrictions on abortion clinics related to proximity to full-service hospitals and other restrictions as well. There were some minor differences between the Texas law and the Louisiana law. That case was a 5-3 decision striking down the law. Justice Scalia had died in while the case was pending, and thus there were only 8 justices voting. In the Hellerstedt case, dissenting from the court's majority was Chief Justice John Roberts, who said that the Texas law should not have been struck down, and that is significant because of what happened yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say this makes 2 very disappointing rulings for religious conservatives just so far this Supreme Court term. Who knows what's going to happen next, right? This loss particularly stings because of that, because Roberts dissented in that Hellerstedt decision. And so we thought that the conservative majority would pull through here. So what happened?
Yeah, we talked about that. In fact, we puzzled over it because we thought, why in the world would this Louisiana case, which is so similar in its substance to the Texas case, be granted certiorari by the court if it wasn't the court's intention to reverse Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt? What happened was, to go right to Roberts's concurrence, or at least part of it, is that Roberts did something very peculiar for a Supreme Court judge. Now, when we talk about federal appellate court judges, the circuit courts are obligated to obey the precedent set by the Supreme Court. That is, even if a judge doesn't agree with the outcome of a Supreme Court case in a circuit court, like, for instance, the Sixth Circuit Court, which sits in the Midwest, or the Ninth Circuit, which sits on the West Coast, that judge still has to vote in accordance with the Supreme Court decision. And that's precedent. That precedent controls, and therefore the court has to obey it. The Supreme Court itself is not bound by its own precedents. That is to say, if the Supreme Court subsequently decides that a case was wrongly decided, it has the authority to reverse that case. Chief Justice Roberts said that he disagreed with the outcome of this case. He voted with majority, said he disagreed with the outcome, said he thought that the Texas law was constitutional, and he said that he thought the Louisiana law was constitutional, but he said, we have to follow the rule of Hellerstedt, the 2016 Texas case, because that's the law of the land. Well, this is a perverse understanding of precedent, or what we call stare decisis on the Supreme Court level. If whole women's health was wrongly decided, if it was bad constitutional law, and if June Medical Services is bad constitutional law, then the Chief Justice had an obligation to vote in accordance with that being a bad constitutional law, and therefore to uphold the Louisiana law. But instead, he said, our precedent in Hellerstedt obligates me to vote to invalidate the Louisiana law. This is a bizarre reading of stare decisis. Now, there are reasons that a court might uphold a wrongly decided law. That is, and one of those reasons might be that the law has created a whole web of other laws and regulations such to undo that bad decision would cause social chaos. That simply wasn't the case here. And so Roberts, it's just puzzling, Annie, to try to figure out how this man reasons, because he basically is politicizing the court while saying that he's not politicizing the court. And for him to apply a bad law that he says even in his concurrence is bad law because of a law a mere 4 years ago, or a case decided a mere 4 years ago, it is just bizarre. And it makes us wonder whether Roberts could ever vote to abandon Roe v. Wade, as Justice Thomas wants him to, and the rest of the court too, when he has this understanding of stare decisis.
Well, that's depressing, Ken. Well, let's talk about some of the issues that came forward in this. First, that of standing, which I understand was something that a lot of the dissenting opinions brought out.
Yeah, especially Justice Thomas. He had the strongest dissent, but he wasn't the only one. The standing issue is an important one, and the court was explicitly asked to consider it. And that's this. The law in Louisiana would have required abortionists to have admitting privileges at hospitals. Well, the aggrieved party in this case, if there was an aggrieved party, was not the abortionist, but rather the person seeking an abortion. And therefore, the aggrieved party, the person seeking an abortion, would arguably have standing to bring the lawsuit, that is, have the ability to bring the lawsuit, but not the abortion provider itself. Justice Thomas pointed this out, and he pointed it out in the context of conflict of interest. Here you have a law that is designed to, and in fact does, protect the health of women, being challenged by abortion providers whose interest is to perform abortions and therefore make a profit from performing abortions. A clear conflict of interest. So you have the abortion clinics bringing a lawsuit on behalf of a group of people with whom they have a conflict of interest. And so Scalia would have denied standing altogether. I'm sorry, Thomas would have, Scalia would have too. But Thomas said that standing should have been denied altogether, that these clinics should not have been permitted even to bring it. But of course, the majority decided otherwise.
Okay, what is really baffling to me about this and Hellerstedt, you know, 4 years ago, is that I'm pretty sure that my dentist has to have admitting privileges to a nearby hospital. And yet, for some reason, abortion clinics are getting a pass on this requirement, which brings us to this idea of undue burden, quote unquote, undue burden to woman's quote unquote right to abortion. And we thought that that was going to come up in this case.
Yeah. First of all, you're right. Your dentist does, your LASIK surgeon does have to have admitting privileges and so forth and so on. We thought that this was going to be an opportunity, as the court has hinted before, to abandon the so-called undue burden standard from the Casey case from Pennsylvania in 1992, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. They played lip service to it, but actually, if anything, they strengthened the undue burden standard in this case by not really even applying an undue burden standard from Casey, but going further and applying a legislative standard of comparing the burdens with the benefits, yet another flaw in the court's decision. In other words, the court didn't just ask whether the Louisiana law placed an undue burden on a woman's access to abortion. Rather, it performed a balancing test, balancing the burden of women versus the benefit of the law. That's almost never, and certainly not in this case, the court's prerogative. That's a legislative task. The legislature has the task of balancing burdens and benefits when it passes a law. That's not the court's role, and it never has been the court's role. So while it uses the term undue burden and therefore invokes the shadow of Casey, what it's really doing is a legislative task in balancing, in its mind, the burden that the law imposes versus the benefit that it provides. And of course, again, once again, it came down on the wrong side of that. Once again, Justice Thomas pointed that out, that the court doesn't have a role in balancing burdens and benefits. If at most, applying Casey, it can ask if there's an undue burden on a woman's right to choose abortion, so-called, but it doesn't have the authority to do this balancing test, which once again it did. And once again, it shows the court has applied a different set of standards when abortion is the issue than it applies when other kinds of health-related legislation comes before it. There are two standards before the Supreme Court on health issues, one for abortion and one for everything else. And we see that again in the court doing this burden versus benefit balancing test, which is not the court's role to do.
Well, Ken, really appreciate all of your analysis on this. We've got Craig Kraft Law linked at sunrisemorningshow.com, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon. Thank you.
I'm sure we will. Thanks, Annie.
All right, it's 13 till. We're back with Elizabeth Scalia next.
I'm Matt Swaim, grateful that Visiting Angels underwrites the Sunrise Morning Show. People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide to continue living at home rather than a nursing home. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework, and services are provided up to 24 hours per day with caregiver selection before service begins. Visiting Angels, online at visitingangels.com. That's visitingangels.com.
Have you considered energizing your business marketing plan? The Sunrise Morning Show is heard across the U.S. on more than 360 Catholic radio stations, reaching millions of engaged listeners in the heart of the morning commute. You can speak directly to a loyal group of like-minded people who prefer to use businesses who share their faith and values. Find out more about underwriting the Sunrise Morning Show by emailing me, Leah, at sacredheartradio.com. That's Leah at sacredheartradio.com.
Have you gotten in the habit of making your own coffee at home but miss those unique coffee shop blends and brews? Why not have the best of both worlds by getting yourself some Mystic Monk Coffee?
The Monks offer a number of specialty coffees and teas, which would be particularly good over ice on a hot summer day. And when you click the Mystic Monk link at sunrisemorningshow.com, we get a portion of your purchase price.
While you're at our site, check out our online store to get a coffee mug and other Sunrise Morning Show swag.
Find our store and link to Mystic Monk Coffee at sonrisemorningshow.com.
He was a doctor of the church and one of the most famous saints of all time.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Augustine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, but he balanced his genius with humility. Once declared, it was pride that changed angels into devils. It is humility that makes men as angels. He died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
11 minutes before the hour, here's Anna with headlines.
The pro-life community is expressing shock and disappointment in the Supreme Court ruling in favor of allowing Louisiana abortion clinics to operate without their abortionists having admitting privileges at a nearby hospital. The Archdiocese of St. Louis is issuing a statement defending the statue of King St. Louis IX that sits in Forest Park. And the IRS will not be extending the tax filing deadline again, so your tax return is due July 15th. You can hear news at the top and bottom of each hour right here on the Sunrise Morning Show. It's 11 till. Joining us now on the Sunrise Morning Show is Elizabeth Scalia. You can find her blog online at theanchoress.com. She's also an editor over at Word on Fire. Good morning, Elizabeth. Welcome back.
Good morning, Annie. How are you?
I am doing just fine and really excited to be talking to you again. And we're going to be discussing the topic of reconciliation, particularly the kind of reconciliation that our society is so in desperate need of finding right now. Why is that kind of reconciliation so hard?
Everything is hard if you're approaching it from the truth.
Yeah.
And I think in the case of what's going on right now, a lot of people, I want to be really careful how I put this because I don't want to presume anybody is, you know, involved in anything nefarious or anything like that, or, you know, that anybody has lived their life in a way that makes them immediately guilty. There's an awful lot of that going on in the world where there's a lot of finger pointing and a lot of people calling each other names and a lot of people making assumptions about other people that are not fair. So that's kind of what's going on right now. I mean, and sometimes the assumptions are fair. I mean, I think if nothing else, the last couple of weeks have really shown us that there are a lot of open wounds that maybe some people thought were healed in the 70s or the 80s or the 90s, or maybe some people thought they were healed because we finally had a black president. Mm-hmm. And we're discovering that, no, not only are these wounds not healed, we've been very remiss in how we've tried to address them. And so there's a lot of anger out there, and there's a lot of hurt out there. And the thing that I've been thinking watching all of this is that so much of what we're looking at is rooted in fear. And most of our sin is rooted in fear anyway, either fear of not being good enough or fear of, you know, not having enough or you know, that makes us greedy.
Yeah.
Or fear that we're not good enough in some way, and so we lie about ourselves, we misrepresent ourselves. I mean, everything, all of us sin can be in some way attached to this feeling of fear. And that's kind of what we feel like when we go into the confessional, too. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've put off going to confession because of something that I knew, man, I've confessed this a million times, and here we go, I'm going to do this again.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows my voice, and
yeah. Yep.
And there's that whole thing. That, but watching all of this, one of the things that occurred to me is that, you know, if we want real reconciliation, whether it's with God or with each other, it's going to cost us something.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't come for free. It's not enough to say, I'm never going to sin again. We know that's not going to be true. It's not true. It's not enough to say, I'm sorry. We also offer penance. We put a piece of ourselves into things in the hopes that mm-hmm. we will heal, we will get better. And we'll stop confessing the same darn sin all the time.
Right. You know, someone might be asking, thinking about the ills of society, particularly when it comes to the issue of racism. You know, why do I have to be a part of this at all? I'm not the problem. What would your response be to that?
Well, none of us think we're ever the problem for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not into, like, wholesale blanket condemnations. I don't like to do that to anybody, and
yeah.
I don't like it to be seen as something that's done to everyone. But, I mean, we can take our reflection here from the church. We say the same thing about, you know, the sins that have happened in our church with the abuse scandals and everything. And on one hand, we're like, well, I'm not the one who did that. These stupid priests are, and this dumb bishop is, and why should I have to make any reparation to God for it? And yet, we are a church. We are an entity that is one. And so we share, and also not just the joys but the sufferings of the church. We share not only in its triumphs but also in its penances. And so there's this sense that, I mean, I speaking only for myself, but I know a lot of other Catholics who feel this way. You know, I have done fasting and I have done, you know, acts of reparation on behalf of the church. And it's
mm-hmm.
kind of the same thing. I don't have to do it, because I didn't do any of those bad things. But as a Catholic, if I want this church to heal and get better, I need to put something of myself into, you know, that sense of reconciliation and reparation. Because, all right, maybe I didn't do anything, but maybe I heard something about a priest, you know, 15 years ago and didn't think twice about it and didn't do anything about it, mm-hmm. you know? And it's the same thing when you look at racism. All right, maybe you haven't, let's take an extreme example, maybe you haven't thrown a brick at someone. You know,
yeah.
verbally or metaphorically or in reality, and yet maybe you've heard someone throw a brick, mm-hmm. you know, and you didn't speak up.
Yeah.
And, well, then you've got some culpability there, too, and we all do.
That whole idea of being a guilty bystander, which you discuss a lot in your piece over at wordonfire.org, and we've only got about a minute left here, Elizabeth, but what would you suggest to anyone to be a part of the reconciliation? I mean, what's one way that we can do that?
You know, this is going to sound really strange and odd, but Confessions of a Guilty Bystander, or Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander, is something written by Thomas Merton. A long time ago, when the country was kind of roiling through this back in 1968, and one of the things that he had this moment where he was in his little village doing some errand, and then he said there was a moment where suddenly I saw the secret beauty of these people. I saw them the way God sees them. And, you know, for a second, they were all as bright as the sun. He said, but how do you tell people that they're all standing around shining with the light of God? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the way to start, is to look at someone and say, you know, I don't like this person. Let's talk about somebody we don't like in the news. A politician. Fix any politician you want to it. And then say, darn it. But God loves that person as much as I do.
Yeah.
You know, when you come to that realization, you suddenly realize you have a lot of work to do.
No doubt. No doubt. Thank you so much, Elizabeth Scalia. You can find her piece on this at wordonfire.org. And Matt, I believe that Alice von Hildebrand would call that a Mount Tabor moment.
Did you notice that both Dr. Regis Martin at the beginning of this hour and Elizabeth Scalia at the end of this hour invoked that same example? And
yes.
I guarantee you they didn't talk to each other about it.
Yep.
That's pretty crazy.
Pretty crazy.
It's also pretty crazy that the hour's already up. We'll join you on the Sunrise Morning Show again tomorrow on EWTN. May God bless you and keep you and grant you his peace.